mighty phantoms of the evening sky. To whom do these celestial steeds belong? When have you appeared to us like gods on high? What brings you here to mystify?
Kate Valentine's UFO show. Watching strange visitors that come and go. The UFO show with Kate Valentine. We're gonna travel through space and rocket through time. Exploring what is possible, examining what is logical. Could we really be here all alone? From the subatomic universe to black holes in space, with a very open attitude and low absolute magnitude.
UFO show and shine.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Kate Valentine with the UFO Show on 1160 WVNJ. Now, millennia ago, our ancestors saw lights in the sky. First, the stars they saw thought to be many things, but one of those things they thought they could not be was a nuclear fusion-driven energy power plant, 10,000-degree plasma fireball called the Sun. Millennia later, more ancestors saw things flying in the sky. They thought that only birds and insects could fly. They did not think that turbo-driven jet engines could. These days, we see lights in the sky and think they are many things. We think one of those things that they could not be is warp-drive-type spacecraft here from a far, far place, driven by sentient beings. Maybe we're wrong again. One way to find out is to research those lights and those things. One good place to do that would be a small government branch of, let's say, NASA. One good person to do that would be Leslie Kane. And I am happy to say that Ms. Kane has agreed to come on the show again. As I said the last time Ms. Kane was on, and I say again, if you think UFOs, whatever they do turn out to be, do not exist, then read her incredibly well-researched and well-documented book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record, and then think again, because UFOs do exist. So welcome back to the show, Leslie Kane. It's nice to have you here again with us.
It's great to be back with you, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. But for those listeners who had not tuned in last time, it would be good if you told us how you got so involved in this field, because you have devoted 10 years of very professional investigative journalism at the highest government levels, too. And you'd have to say you have dedicated it all to this cause.
You're right. Probably a lot of people would think that's pretty bizarre, but actually I'm very happy that I did it. And the way I got started in this was, just so people know that I am a journalist by training.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, it's all done from the perspective of a journalist. And I was working at a public radio station in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time and had done a lot of freelance writing and publishing newspapers in various parts of this country and other places in the world. And what happened was I was sent a report from France by a colleague of mine. It was a sort of advanced English translation of this study that had been done by retired French military officials. And it was a study on the UFO phenomenon. And it included four generals, including a four-star general, an admiral, and the former head of the French National Space Agency, plus a lot of other people. It was a very impressive group. And I got this report just sort of out of the blue. It was 90 pages. They discussed various cases that they had researched, all cases with lots of official data. And this group came to the conclusion that the best explanation for the small percentage of cases that they were concerned about, which of course is not most UFO sightings, but the ones that have lots of official data that go with them, they concluded that out of those cases, they thought the best explanation for the phenomenon was what they called the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And they said they just could come up with no other explanation, and that this was the most rational, the most logical, and the most likely explanation. And they certainly made it clear that it had not been proven by any means. And they made the point that we need to try and find out more about what the phenomenon actually is. But the fact that they said, made this statement, that people at this level would come out with a statement like that, I thought was a big story at the time as a journalist. And I thought, you know, wow, imagine if government, if American officials ever said something like that.
Exactly.
You know, it was a big story, as far as I'm concerned, that they actually had written this and come to this conclusion after 3 years of intensive investigation at the highest level. So that's what got me started on the whole study, since you asked. And I've always taken that approach all along, is really trying to get to the actual facts through the highest possible sources within the official world and through government documents and, you know, very, very credible information. And all of that has kind of culminated in the book that you just mentioned earlier.
Yeah, as I said, it is so well documented. It's not a speculative book at all. It's just a presentation of what has happened, and that's a very large difference. And you know, last time we went over all the so-called evidence or proof or whatever, there was a Belgium Triangle flap, the Hudson Valley Triangle flap, Rendlesham Forest, these uber credible witnesses that you state, the generals, the admirals. So what I was going to do this time was, and I think it might be more interesting to the audience, because you make the point too that we've had enough of sightings, we have to get to the root of what these things are. The last chapters in your book, you discuss a very interesting paper, Sovereignty and the UFO, and that was written by Dr. Alexander Wendt and Dr. Raymond Duval. And they discuss the UFO taboo in elite culture, and that was a very apt description, elite culture. I like that. You're referring to the government and the science and the general media, I believe.
Right, that's sort of how they sort of see the three legs of what compose our culture, the sort of the groups that determine the trends and make the decisions. Yeah, government, scientific community, and mainstream media. Exactly.
Yeah, and also you make the point that the their private opinions are not their public ones, which is I think when you speak to these people, they'll probably tell you what they think, not what they say.
Yeah, and they make that point, and it's true that, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks privately about UFOs, you know, still the sort of the culture is not determined by those private beliefs as much as it is by sort of what the mutually agreed upon, you know, reality is of the particular time that's sort of acceptable to everybody. But it is an interesting point that often these people who are the leaders who compose that reality actually might have different beliefs that they keep to themselves. So that's sort of a curious state of affairs. And there are high-level people, you know, they have come up in such close contact to this phenomenon, whether they've been official investigators or actual witnesses, that it's hard when you're that close to it to not have your own opinions about it. And they're hesitant, you know, to express them, but they certainly will state what they think is most likely the case. And these are the people that really want investigation, too, because they want verification and all of that. So, yeah, it is an interesting dichotomy between what sort of the accepted norm is versus what people actually believe who may have had direct experience with this. And that includes people at high levels.
Yeah, well you said you make some interesting points, too. You say that eventually that taboo has to be broken down, because there's several reasons, and the one that I think is probably most significant is that they don't go away. You know, for as long as anyone's recorded history, there have been strange objects in the sky, and they are possibly a potential physical threat. I mean, I don't think so, but you don't know.
We don't know. I mean, and it's true. It seems unlikely because, as you say, the reason not to think so is, of course, that they have been here for so long, and so far we haven't had anything terrible happening as a result. But nonetheless, it's a very mysterious phenomenon that we know very little about. We don't really know why they're here or where they're from or what their intentions are, if indeed those questions even apply to this thing. So because of the sort of unknown element of it, you know, there is always that potential. And what these two political scientists propose, who you just mentioned, who wrote this second to last chapter in the book, which I think I agree with you is totally fascinating.
Yeah, really.
I had a train of thought there and then I lost it.
I'm sorry, but
you know, it's about, they suggest that even unconsciously, that is because of that potential threat, that is so important, that that is the reason that one of the underlying reasons that governments could possibly, you know, could be withholding information or afraid to deal with it or just ignoring it. You know, all the bizarre ways that our government has of dealing with this subject could be affected by this kind of underlying fear because of the threat that's represented by this issue. And I think that's very, very true. I think we all have. It's hard not to have some level of fear, and certainly for people who haven't studied this. Mm. You know a lot about it, so you can have a more balanced approach. But for people who want to think of, you know, human beings as the center of the universe, the all-powerful, all-knowing creatures, and don't want to, don't know much about the history of this phenomenon, if they are forced to come to terms with the fact that there's something unknown out there that is more powerful than we are, apparently, because of the technology they demonstrate to us, that can be a very frightening thought. And the political scientists propose that that has a lot of implications for that particular feeling of threat.
Well, that would
or how it's handled. Yeah,
sure. Well, this is Kate Valentine, and I am speaking to Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. We're in 1160 WVNJ. What do you think of all this? What do you think? Is there a government cover-up? Are these people fibbing to us? Call, let us know, 800-962-1160. You can post your opinion on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. You know, you were talking about anthropocentrism. I guess that's the way you pronounce it. But that was another... that was sort of another threat, too, that people feel that up until now, disasters strike human different areas of human civilization, and humans take care of it. But something like this would be out of our hands, and we could no longer take care of it. And I don't think anybody really wants to be in second place in that sense.
I think you're absolutely right. It sort of relates to the comment Stephen Hawking made recently that he was so riled up about. And I think it's true. I mean, the concept of anthropocentric.
Thank you.
Means, you know, I'm reading it out of the book, actually, because it is a hard one to pronounce. But it's basically a human-centered approach that sort of, there's nothing sort of more powerful or more sophisticated or more intelligent than human beings. And, you know, that the whole organization of our, the way they describe it, the political scientists here, is that the political structures that we have and the organization of our society is all based on that assumption that only human beings, you know, have the ability to govern and to have authority over other human beings. And there's no other sort of, there's nothing else. And when you start to throw in the possibility of a whole nother type of intelligent being that could be out there, it challenges that very, very foundation, that very basic assumption that we have a sort of what they call human-centeredness. So that's another, when you were talking about threats, I think that sort of ties into with the threat we were just talking about, you know, this sort of otherness, this unknownness of something very powerful that threatens the whole structure of how we see ourselves politically as well as in other ways.
Yeah, so the UFO phenomenon almost is a mirror on human society. That's sort of an interesting concept, I think.
I think so, and it even ties in a little bit with religion.
Yeah.
Well, it's a big question. It's a big issue.
Well, we had a agnostic skeptic, if you will, on one of the midnight shows, and he is an astrophysicist, and he sort of believes for some odd reason that we are the only sentient beings around, and... But I quoted to him, and it's true, I can't remember now, the British Astronomer Royal one time said that either we're alone in the universe or we're not. Either way, it's an awesome thought.
Right, that's a famous quote, or a terrifying thought, I think he said.
Yeah.
Wasn't it the word terrifying?
Yeah.
Either option is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like
well,
yeah.
It's so true. And, you know, actually, as this fellow, Dr. Frank, said, he said it's almost like a sacred trust then if we were. And, you know, so in a sense, you almost hope that you're not, but, you know. But
I guess if you see it as something frightening.
Yeah.
But I guess some people would hope that we are not alone, you know, that we can make contact with other civilizations, that we can become part of some kind of galactic community. I mean, people have these ideas that they see it in a very positive light. I think that's a nice idea, but the bottom line is we really don't know yet what we're dealing with.
Well, I'll tell you, that's a good thought to end just for right now, because we're going to need a short break. But audience, think about that. Come back with your comments, your thoughts, your opinions right after the break at 800-962-1160, or post them on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to the Kate Valentine UFO Show on 1160 WVNJ. Today, our guest is Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. You're welcome to join in on this conversation. You can call us at 800-962-1160, or you can reach us on the web, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. You know, Leslie, just before the break, we were talking about all these potential threats to society and government. And one of the things is that it also almost calls forth a global government if we're going to deal with civilizations off-planet. And I think that's a true threat to, you know, regional governments and actually regional cultures and mores and so on.
Absolutely right. I think that's another very interesting point, and the political scientists in our book also bring that up, the threat sort of, you know, individual statehood.
Mm-hmm.
And people like to keep their boundaries and their differences intact, and we're sort of used to that. And, yeah, it's true. I mean, if we're dealing with something outside of the planet, then there, it sort of forces more of a homogenous kind of unified perspective among different countries. And I think a lot of people would think that could be a positive thing.
But
I think some of these countries who want to who don't like to think that way in sort of a more expanded way of looking at ourselves, you know, it makes them kind of contract and resist it because they want to preserve their individuality. But it could be a positive thing, I would think.
Well, Ronald Reagan, I think, said that in front of the UN. I forget the exact quote, but if there was an external threat, how everybody would start to pull together and forget their differences for a bit.
Exactly, and that's, could be one positive side effect of the whole thing. I mean, who knows what else we might be dealing with, but that's sort of something that
sure.
We could see as sort of a forward evolution, perhaps.
Well, and then, you know, there's always people that would say, look, there's no sense getting all riled up about all these possibilities because they don't exist. And, UFOs just don't exist. And you know, just for those who are listening who may still be somewhat in doubt, I thought we'd go over the four main arguments that the skeptics have. First of all, well, I think we sort of touched on this one already. We are alone. It just seems like now there's, I remember when I was a child that there was no thought whatsoever of being able to get to the moon, and now we've gone there. Up to 15 years ago, astronomers were, you know, just actually astronomers that worked at it were arguing whether or not there were even such a thing as other planets. Now they've discovered well over 400 exoplanets and well on their way to more. And I don't know if you probably heard about Gliese 581, where they found.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to mention. That's such an exciting development of this planet that they most likely has water on it and is the right temperature to support at least the kind of life that we know of as life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Predictions are a lot more planets like that discovered in the coming years. So, you know, I think that is all extremely interesting and exciting.
Oh, yeah. And then they said, then the next argument is that they couldn't get here anyway because the distances are so far. And certainly with today's technology, that is correct. But, you know, you always feel like there's some way to get around that, some way to warp space-time as they do in science fiction. And, I mean, who knows? That is beyond us at this point, but I don't think it's beyond other civilizations. And then we're always positing that on a 100-year lifetime. I mean, these people...
I know. I mean, imagine if we had a civilization, you know, thousands and thousands or even millions of years more advanced than we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's total, and scientists would agree with this, many of them, that it's conceivable that they would have mastered space travel by then, and that they would have been able to develop ways of getting around quickly through wormholes or through bending space-time or all these things that seem so far out to us.
Mm-hmm.
But scientists like Michio Kaku have certainly, thought a lot about these things and written about them and explained how it is conceivable that very advanced civilizations could develop technology like this. So, you know, we cannot assume that we understand in our infancy here on this planet how everything might work thousands or millions of years ahead of us, or for civilizations that have lived a lot longer than we have. So, you know, you have to be open to that possibility. It's not a strong enough argument to completely rule it out. Let's put it that way.
Well, because it was only 105 years ago that planes and flight came into,
exactly.
You know, that's not a very long time.
Exactly. I know. I agree with you.
And then the other argument is that they would make themselves apparent. They would land on the White House lawn. And, you know, in 1952, they didn't land, but they flew over it twice. And then there was, right after that, there was so much theory and speculation and all this that Eisenhower met with the aliens and formed a treaty at Holloman Air Force Base. And I'm not so sure there was so much smoke there. I think there was a little fire as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about that. I cannot stand behind the idea that Eisenhower has met with them. I mean, again, as a journalist, it's very hard for me to mm-hmm. rely on information like that. There's so many interesting possibilities, and of course, that's sort of been out there as one of them. But I don't think there's enough information to determine that. But I do think it's important that, you know, why should one assume that if we're being visited by very, very advanced civilizations, that they would necessarily want to communicate with us?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dr. Michio Kaku, who's, you know, a best-selling author and just incredibly brilliant physicist, made that point fairly recently that the way he would see it, if indeed these UFOs do represent extraterrestrial civilizations, is that perhaps they're just flying by and having a look. And he made the analogy to if we were walking through a rainforest and saw an anthill.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we wouldn't approach the ants and try to talk to them and offer them gifts and try to make treaties with them and land on their areas and try to communicate. I mean, you know, he says we might step on a few, but that would be it. I think the analogy is sort of interesting that, you know, why should we assume that they would be so interested in communicating with us? They may have no need for us. They may be just here to sort of zip in and survey what's going on, or, you know, they have whatever. And again, it's sort of that anthropocentric sense we have of ourselves as being so important that we are willing to, you know, some people who want to debunk this and don't want to look at it are willing to say, well, if they haven't made themselves known to us, then they can't possibly exist.
Right.
You know, the logic just doesn't hold. It just doesn't hold. I mean, we have no idea whether they would be interested in communicating with us or contacting us or not. And you've also made the important point, Kate, that they have certainly displayed their presence many, many, many times. And, of course, that's what my book is all about. And so to some extent, their presence had been made very clear to us. They just haven't done the kind of dramatic introductions that some people think are the only rational way for them to behave. And, you know, we are not in any position to make any assumptions at all about how some unknown other from some other part of the universe would behave. I mean, it's just such a ridiculous kind of egocentric notion that people think they can make that assumption. I just think,
well, and they are alien, they're not human, so it's hard to think for them.
Exactly.
This is Kate Valentine, and I am speaking to Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. We're on 1160 WVNJ, and we'd like to know what you think. You can call us, 800-962-1160, or post your opinion on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. You know, also, Leslie, you mentioned in your book, and I had forgotten this, a while back, Congress had funded, I think that was one of those Golden Fleece Awards, and that funding was taken away. But what seems to be the UFOs? I mean, it just again, I guess it's all just they don't feel it exists. Or
yeah, you mean in general, or you mean with among the SETI people, or
no, just in general. Why wouldn't Congress, like, let's say, set up a small branch of NASA? Just say, look, there are some phenomena. You know, Richard Hayden's made an excellent point. He said, just change the name from UFO to UAP. I mean,
right.
That was an excellent point. And then just say, look, there are unexplained phenomena. They're in the air. They're over our airspace. They violate Class Bravo time and time again. I mean, Phoenix Lights, Hudson Valley Flap. We really need to know what these things are, so why not investigate them?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like such a rational, simple question, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the answers are very complicated, and our government, as I've shown in the book through many different cases and interviews and things, has basically been, in the best-case scenario, you would call it ignoring them. You know, worst case, covering them up and hiding them. So, I mean, you have to ask the simple question that you've asked. Why don't they do the rational thing? It wouldn't cost a lot of money. And we are, of course, in the book proposing, and I'm determined to try to make it happen, that happen now, that we do set up a small office to deal with this. But the why question is very interesting, and I think it's complicated and hard to answer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very clear that that our government is behaving irresponsibly and irrationally towards this. By not doing that, by not just simply acknowledging that there are things that are unexplained, as other countries have done. Our country does not want to acknowledge that. And it could be for the reasons we've been discussing about these underlying fears, concerns about threats, or people feeling panicky or frightened. And, you know, governments don't necessarily want to acknowledge that there's something more powerful than they are that they cannot control. And I think that's the key thing. If our government has no control over these objects, which can come and go at will and do whatever they want, they don't necessarily want to tell people about that.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, and you give us several good reasons for the prohibition of this research. You say that, number one, the techniques that are used are, number one, there is no authoritative definition of UFOs, and there is an officially sanctioned but problematic inquiry, like the Condon Report, and that would be an excellent way to do it.
Right, to have some kind of officially sanctioned study, and that's one of the things I think we would like to try and work for now, is to get the National Academy of Sciences involved in looking again at this data, and possibly just, you know, all we need is some kind of acknowledgement from
mm-hmm.
these people
right.
that there is something worthy of study here.
Okay, hang on.
And
just
that sort of counteracts the Condon Committee. Yeah.
Yeah. Roseanne is on the line now from Rockaway, and she has a question. Roseanne?
Okay. Oh, hi, Kate. This is Roseanne in Rockaway, and I just want to say hi to Leslie and say that I really have enjoyed her book. I've recommended it both verbally on Facebook and on my blog, and I hope that she's gotten some readers from that. However, I want to broach the question about alien contact and some study that I've been doing personally, having been an experiencer of the UFO phenomena in past years. I wonder what she thinks about the idea that the aliens have a different skill set and a different senses, and possibly could be making contact with some individuals through the process of a sleep paralysis, which, you know, most of us know is a biological safeguard that we're given, that when we sleep, we don't act out our dreams. So we realized it is my belief or indication, I don't want to say belief, there's an indication that they use this. Now, whether they're from space or they're from another dimensional plane, I don't really know. But I wondered what her thoughts were on that.
Did you get that?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's very hard for me to hear, but I could hear. Is it Roseanne or Rosanna?
Rosanna.
Rosanna. Well, thanks a lot, Rosanna, and thanks for doing all the stuff on Facebook. And I hope you'll visit my page at some point and put a little comment there, because I have a really cool Facebook page, and we have great discussions going on. It's an open page. You don't have to get to be a friend or anything. And this would probably be an interesting point to discuss there. And I just want to respond that I think that there is a lot of very interesting research that's been done about the issues that you've brought up. I totally agree with you. And I've spoken to many people who have had various kinds of experiences of, you know, dealing with what they believe to be these beings from, as you say, who knows from where, interdimensional or extraterrestrial or whatever. And I, you know, I always just tell people that I'm really not an expert on that particular aspect of this. I mean, I think it's extremely valid and worthwhile, and I think that there are books that have been written about it by people like Bud Hopkins and John Mack and David Jacobs that are all worth reading. And I have great respect for people who have experienced these kinds of things. I just, it's hard for me to comment really beyond that, because it's not the area that I focus my attention on. But I totally respect it and, you know, find it fascinating, personally fascinating. I just have no expertise in it, really. So I hope that that comment is helpful, and it's really about all I can say about it.
Well, thank you for calling, Roseanne, and thank you, too, for answering, Leslie. It's Kate Valentine again. I'm speaking to Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. We'll be right back after a short break with your opinions, your thoughts, your comments. Call in 800-962-1160 or post them on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. We'll be right back. Hi, and welcome back to the Kate Valentine UFO Show on 1160 WVNJ. Today, our guest is Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, Government Officials Go on the Record. You're welcome to join in on the conversation at any time. Give us a call, 800-962-1160, or you can reach us on the website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. You know, just before the break, we were talking about how the prohibition on UFO research, and as you said, the government and the sciences, the top sort of how would you say the sort of state science, I guess, those who are responsible for getting grants can put a lid on this. But what we didn't mention was my personal favorite, and that was disciplining through ridicule, gossip, and shunning, and that leading to self-censorship. I think that is really the most important of all of this. Don't you think so?
Yeah, it's very, very important. It's so prevalent, and I mean, so many witnesses and people with important information are afraid to provide it because of this fear, you know, that they can be ridiculed, that they can be professionally affected by that, it's the power of that taboo, and yes, it's a technique used against witnesses, used against people that want to risk just taking a stand on this, and you know, somebody like John Podesta, for instance, who wrote the foreword to my book,
yes,
was President Clinton's former chief of staff. I mean, you know, it took a lot of courage for him. He didn't seem to mind at all. He doesn't, you know, he's very, very brilliant and kind of savvy and. But, you know, people always say, well, God, a guy like that is willing to take a stand on UFOs. That's pretty amazing because, you know, and many of his colleagues will not do it for the very reason that you just brought up, Kate. And they've communicated this to him. You know, they always want to do things behind closed doors, blah, blah, blah. Big problem with people being, you know, diminished in the public eye for having an interest in this. So it's one of the techniques that's used to keep the taboo going.
Very powerful.
Absolutely.
Very powerful. Because I've written to several astrophysicists. Dr. Frank was one of the few that was brave enough to come on. And, I mean, he was a skeptic, but he presented his case, and it was fine. But so many have absolutely, as soon as they hear the word UFO, bam, they're gone.
Right.
They're just so, and I can understand that too. I mean, they really, their living depends on getting grants. And if, as you said, if they're sort of professionally diminished, they're not going to get them. And it's a real problem.
It's a real problem. And of course, there are scientists who have broken through that. And I'm sure there are, you know, some that, such as the ones who have endorsed my book and people that, you know, would be willing to come on this very good show, but a lot of those people are retired people.
Yeah, exactly.
People that, you know, were in the academic community that have very strong credentials.
Right.
Written all kinds of, you know, papers in peer-reviewed journals and everything that, you know, all the things that one does as a respected scientist, but since they're no longer associated with the university and not dependent on that anymore, they're willing to take more of a stand on it. It's harder to find people, you know, act, and the same thing is true with for military witnesses. I mean, most of them are retired, so it's and if you bring up the subject matter to those who don't know something about it, you know, scientists who don't know something about it, their knee-jerk reaction, of course, is going to be very negative. It's the ones that know something about it that are different, and it takes some work to understand this issue. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not something that is easy to understand because we've all sort of been raised but with the concept that it's a joke. That's sort of the cultural norm. And so all of us are going to have that sense of it unless we've done something to counter it, which involves, you know, looking into it a little bit. And anyway, and that was really so much of why I wrote this book, Kate, because I'm hoping that this book just provides one read, You don't have to spend months and months studying documents or researching this. If you just read this book, you're going to get it, because all the best information is there as to, you know, for people like scientists. It's written for people like that that don't have a lot of time but want to really get the facts about this issue. And here they are in one book. So I'm hoping it's going to help bring people around. I'm getting more guests on your show as a result.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, for you out there who are sort of ufologists and you have skeptics in your life, this would be a very good Christmas present for them. UFOs, generals, pilots, and government officials go on the record. It's an excellent book, and it will change their mind. But, you know, as a argument against taboo, you suggested militant agnosticism. Would you explain that to our audience? I think it's a great term.
Yeah, I love that term, too. And again, yeah. This was not my term. This was brought up by the two political scientists, Alexander Wendt and Robert Duvall, who wrote a piece in the book, which I you know, they originally wrote this piece for a peer-reviewed leading political science journal, which is what's so interesting. In 2008, they wrote this long piece about UFOs and sovereignty, I guess is how you say it. And this is sort of a shortened, more accessible version of that, because it was extremely technical. But these guys, you know, have been really great in kind of looking at this through the eyes of political science. And that's why I asked them to write this chapter for the book. The concept of militant agnosticism, which I do love the terms, sort of it has to do with, you know, the agnostic part is really to accept the fact that we do not know what the UFOs are. We have to maintain what they call an agnostic position. This is the scientific position. This is the one that says, yes, there is a phenomenon without question, but we need to find out through, you know, through systematic scientific study what it actually is that we don't yet know. We don't have enough information yet to be certain. And that's basically the agnostic position. That's the position that works in terms of dealing with the status quo as well. I mean, it's a strategic as well as a kind of a rational way to approach this. And the militant part just has to do with being active about it. Militancy is another term for sort of resistance. And, you know, being politically effective in terms of taking a position on it and getting it out there. And even just, you know, just making the point that we need to discover what UFOs are is a very militant position, because our government doesn't want to do that. So that's it's a form of resistance, really, to the status quo. And I encourage everyone to read their chapter in the book. It's really kind of, I think it's very profound to read it after you studied all the cases that are presented.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really, I love thinking of myself as a militant agnostic.
Okay. So we'll put you down as an MA then.
What's that?
We'll put you down as an MA.
An MA, yeah. And I hope we can get a lot of other people to join that kind of perspective.
Okay. Everybody out there who wants to be an MA, call in. This is Kate Valentine. I'm speaking to Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. We're in 1160 WVNJ. If you have a comment, you can call 800-962-1160, or you can post your opinion on our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. Well, speaking of militant agnosticism, this is an election year, and we had an astrobiologist who was nominally chosen as a UN representative to receive the aliens. That's sort of that really surprised me that topic would have even been brought up.
Yeah, I think the timing of it was really interesting. There's just been so much sort of activity in the last few months and over the summer around UFOs. They discovered the exoplanet, and they had a Royal Society conference in London recently about the issue of extraterrestrial contact, and that was sort of why this UN representative spoke up. She was actually there. And I think that the news stories did overblow it a little bit. She corrected the statements as they were reported in the press, which really weren't accurate. I mean, she doesn't feel that she's been appointed to make contact with extraterrestrials, but she believes that if indeed we ever do make contact, that the United Nations certainly would be a body, a structural body that could be, that might be the most appropriate body in the, you know, to deal with it because of who it is. And therefore, they need a point person for that. And she's part of I think it's called the Outer Space Committee or something like that in the UN. So there was sort of all being you know, chosen to communicate with extraterrestrials. I don't think it was quite that, but still very interesting that the whole thing was raised and, you know, along with everything else that's been going on.
It's
been a very rich time.
It keeps popping up, doesn't it? I mean, you had Reagan with his famous speech, you official from Grenada insisting that something be brought up at the UN. Now you have this coming up. And supposedly in Bud Hopkins' book, the person who witnessed this was a high official of the UN. It seems that it keeps hitting around the UN, which would sort of make sense.
Yeah, I think it does make sense, given that it's a world body of countries. And J. Allen Hynek went to the UN back in the 70s. That's when there was this movement underway that you mentioned with the government of Grenada trying to get something done on it. And I've written about that in the book. It's kind of interesting how much the United States government made an effort to resist and to stop this, this effort that was underway to establish some kind of a investigative body within the UN. I mean, that is really interesting. I mean, our government has consistently worked to prevent official bodies since the close of Project Blue Book from getting set up. It did it at the UN, and it also did it at NASA, when even the President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, who tried to get something set up at NASA, was resisted by NASA and by the Air Force. I mean, there were other elements of U.S. government that weighed in on the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of interesting that there are these very bodies out there, these government agencies or the U.N., that would be very suitable to study this issue. And as we said earlier, the U.S. government just seems to want to block that from happening. The United Nations would be very appropriate, I would think. It's just such an intense bureaucratic situation there. It's so slow and very hard for anything to get done because so many countries have to weigh in on the decisions.
Yeah,
it's a problem.
The politics of the UFO phenomenon itself is, you might even do another book on that. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Again, if you'd like to comment on Ms. Kane's book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record, please give us a call, 800-1160, or go right to our website, AtlanticCoastUFOs.com. Right back.
News, talk, and information all of the day and all of the night. It's 1160 WVNJ.
All day and all the night.
24 hours a day, you'll find entertaining and informative talk along with the news you need right here on 1160 WVNJ and streaming live at WVNJ.com.
All day and all the night.
News, talk, information, WVNJ.
PrimePiano.com is a full-service online resource for all your acoustic piano needs, specializing in sales of quality used and repair and complete rebuilding services. Selling, repairing, or restoring a piano, Prime Piano has useful tips, and they can help you further with consultation and guidance. For piano lamps, benches, music cabinets, dollies, covers, hard-to-find polishes, and just about anything you need to make your piano experience complete, visit PrimePiano.com's online store. They are piano humidity control specialists with a full line of damp chaser piano lifesaver supplies available online for your convenience too. For all your acoustic needs, please visit primepiano.com, your online piano resource, primepiano.com.
Cosmic Heart Unity Center, the place to heal and a place to grow.
The Cosmic Heart Unity Center in Montclair, New Jersey is currently offering classes in yoga, feng shui, sacred geometry, astral travel, channeling, elemental illumination, and more. If you need help deciding which class is right for you, call us at 973-748-3333. That's 973-748-3333. Take control and enrich your life today. Call 973-748-3333 or visit our website at www.thecosmicheartcenter.com.
Cosmic Heart Unity Center.
Hi, welcome back to the Kate Valentine Show on 1160 WVNJ. Our guest today is Leslie Kane, the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. Leslie, over break, we had some really interesting web comments come in. Larry, congratulate you on your book. It's gone a long way to make it easier to discuss UFOs. And then Ariel also loves your book, and she wants to know, or he would like to know, what your most gratifying experience has been since you published it.
Since I published it, okay, well, I've been working very, very hard to sort of to publicize it since I published the book. I think the really most exciting experience I've had was going on the Stephen Colbert show.
Oh, no.
I mean, yeah, when he says gratifying, I'm not sure exactly what kind of experience he may be pointing towards, but in terms of, you know, since I published the book, it came out August 10th, so it hasn't been that long. Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of them, was going on with Stephen Colbert, because I'm such a fan of his, and it was just a thrilling experience to do that show. And then after that, it was getting on the New York Times bestseller list. I have to say that was probably the number one most gratifying thing, is that we were on that bestseller list for 3 weeks. And just, you know, I've just been so gratified, too, by the response that has come in, just the comments that have come in, and especially from people who normally would not be open to the subject matter. For instance, I've had family members, you know, who for years have sort of scoffed at this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have something that I can give them and say, you know, here it is. Here's the result of what I've been doing. And when they read it, they're completely respectful. They understand it now. It's sort of like, I'm so happy that finally there's some recognition for what the subject is really all about.
Well,
from people I care about, and from people like scientists and doctors,
yeah,
and people who have written me letters, you know, very, very thoughtful, intelligent, status quo people who normally would never have been open to this subject matter are now sort of getting it, and that was really why I wrote the book. So I've just been extremely gratified by the fact that something is reaching these people.
Well, and you give them substance to comment on. And, like, for example, we had another comment from Earl who said that a momentum needs to be created and maintained. And certainly your book and then Richard Dolan's book. And he feels that if a momentum could be maintained, perhaps a tipping point could be reached. And then, for example, then we had another question that came in from David, who said that he was echoing Nick Pope's New York Times op-ed piece. Now, I mean, Nick Pope on a New York Times op-ed, that alone is an indication that, you know, something's starting to crack, where he cautioned that there were real safety issues with the unidentified and possibly unregistered aircraft overflying airports, such as recently in China, or flying anywhere. And he said, well, you know, David said, should we close our eyes to these things? And it's a good point.
Good point. I'm really happy David wrote that, because, yeah, I remember when Nick Pope's op-ed was written, I believe it might have been the summer of 2009. It was either 2008 or 2009. I have it right in my office. But it was a huge breakthrough, as you commented on, because the New York Times has never run an op-ed piece before about this.
Mm-hmm.
And just about a month before Nick's piece came out, which is really what the motivation was for Nick to pursue this, was a ridicule piece in the New York Times about the MOD release of documents in the UK. And they had the New York Times had it, it wasn't an op-ed piece, but it was a news story that the foreign correspondent in the UK wrote for the New York Times. And it was just a ridiculous story ridiculing these documents, you know, because as we all know, the MOD has released lots and lots of documents, and they've been doing it in batches.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, a batch had just come out, and what this reporter did was focus on the most ridiculous one she could possibly find, which would be letters from, you know, individual people, not letters from the MOD, but letters from the people themselves with drawings, and, you know, she was implying the reporter that they were drunk, or if she just took the silliest stuff she could possibly find, which, of course, is always going to be there in every file that's released.
Right.
And it was very selective. And so what happened was, because of that article, Nick Pope offered his own rebuttal to it, to the New York Times, and that opened the door to them publishing an op-ed. So it's interesting, Kate. Often it's the debunkers that open doors for us to respond, and it gives us a chance to make an even stronger point and to break through some kind of a barrier, which is kind of an irony, really.
Well, except that they don't have substance, and we do. And eventually that is going to be recognized, and I think that is the most important thing about your book, that you bring out not just the UFO itself, but the sociological implications of it. It's fascinating, and that has to be dealt with, and has to be dealt with soon. And Nancy even wrote in and said that the press seems to be reporting on UFOs more lately.
I agree with Nancy. I think that, you know, that in the last few months, I mean, throughout the summer and into this fall, there has been a lot of reporting. I think that over the last 10 years, it's actually gotten better and more serious. But I've noticed, I mean, part of it maybe because of the book, because a lot of the stories have revolved around the book. But nonetheless, I think, you know, the story about the exoplanets, the story of just lots of stories when there's sightings in China, which we've been having lately, or mm-hmm. there was some Texas, and then there was these sightings in New York City a couple of weeks, or maybe a week or so
ago,
which likely were balloons, but I don't think it's been settled at all.
That's
got a lot of media coverage, too. I think Nancy's right, that the press is really interested in this topic, that they recognize that people are interested in it, and they're trying to be more serious about it than they used to be. I mean, not every time, mm-hmm. but I think there is a trend towards more serious coverage and less sort of debunking type coverage than there used to be.
Well, that is true. You don't hear the Twilight Zone theme as much as you used to.
Well, you do. I've been on some TV interviews where they did that one, but, you know,
please.
Kind of get used to it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, we're pretty close to the end of our hour, and if you don't mind, I'd like to read the last few sentences from your book.
Sure.
And this is from Leslie Kane. We must strive to learn what we can, for it's in our deepest nature and best interest to do so. To simply want to find out. Perhaps this discovery will be a turning point in our history. Perhaps not. But most likely, there's something supremely important locked up in the UFO phenomenon that could be transformative for all of us. It's time now, finally, to open our eyes and find out what that might be. Amen, Ms. Kane.
Well, thank you so much for reading that one, Kate. I appreciate that.
That's okay. I think it sums it all up. I really do. But, again, our guest today was Miss Leslie Kane. She is the author of UFOs, Generals, Pilots, Government Officials, Go on the Records. And thanks so much for being here. Any last-minute upcoming events or publications you'd like to bring up?
I'm going for those. I guess you probably don't have listeners in California, so that's not relevant. But if there's anybody online or anything, I am going to be at a conference in San Jose, California on the weekend after this coming weekend. So if anybody's out there, I'd love to meet them.
Okay.
There are some reviews and things coming up, but I don't think I want to announce them until we actually have them ready. So there's lots of things I'm working on, though, but we don't really have time to go into that, I don't think, at this point.
Okay. Well, you could always post it on our website. We'd be glad to hear about them.
Okay, and I hope that people actually will visit my Facebook page, as I mentioned earlier, because everything goes up there, and we have lots of interesting comments coming in. And I also have a book website, which is UFOsOnTheRecord.com, with lots of information and blogs and stuff like that.
Okay, well,
thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. Thanks again for being here, and thank you out there for listening, for adding to this show with your thoughts, your opinions, your comments. They have added to its content in a meaningful way. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday or this Sunday at 4. Until then, remember, keep your eye on the sky. See you next week.